My name is Tina Marie Sarah. I am an American voiceover artist, comedian, musician, and performer currently based in Berlin.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
If it's okay with you, I'm going to jump straight in.
Happily.
The reason that you're here today is for us to speak about your relationship with estrangement, with a parent. But maybe just to clarify, who were or are you currently estranged from?
Yeah, so I am currently estranged from my father. My father and I have always had a very strained relationship. And then when he and my mother separated in 2016, 2017, that was when I pulled the plug, so to say.
How old were you there?
I was 29 when they separated.
Okay. And would you mind, if you're comfortable, sharing with me what that strained relationship looked like or felt like? And how did you know in the moment, now's the time? This is it. I've now had enough.
Yeah. So my father is deeply mentally ill. He suffered from very extreme anxiety and depression my entire life. And he would not handle it, could not handle it, wouldn't seek help. And so this meant that he was very emotionally abusive to everyone in our family, basically starting from the second that I came out the womb. And I have like very vivid memories, even from being so tiny, like 5 and 6 years old, and just him screaming at me and me being like, I wish this man wasn't my dad. I wish I had another dad. I don't want this dad. I'd rather have no dad than this dad. Mm-hmm. I mean, on my Christmas list when I was 8 years old, I put my parents' divorce. Like, and I was so small, but like already then, that young, I was like, no father would be better than this.
What was that moment then when you said your parents separated and you're like, okay, this is, I mean, at the age of 29, were you still living at home? Why was it at that moment that you were emboldened to be like, actually,
this is it,
no contact?
So I've never had a good relationship with my father. I have no memories of having a good relationship with my father. And then as I got older, things just sort of got progressively worse. I think there are a lot of cultural elements into that because I was the oldest and he had a lot of expectations for me that I couldn't meet. Like, he wanted me to be a doctor, a scientist, and I was...
Cultural how?
So my family's Portuguese.
Okay.
So there's a lot tied up in like the father and the firstborn, and there's some cultural pressure, especially I think on the eldest child, or at least that's how I felt. And also seeing sort of the difference in how I was treated versus how my sister was treated. My sister also has an incredibly strained relationship with our father. She has minimal contact with him. They just like text like once or twice a year, whereas I have none. But I think she had it in some ways a little bit easier than I did because she was also more academically inclined in the ways that he wanted me to be and I wasn't. Mm-hmm. I was like a language arts and an artsy creative child and he wanted me to be like a scientist. Mm-hmm. So the physical distance I think really helped. So when I started university, I could physically pull back. And then when I moved abroad for grad school, it was yet another step further. And then I just continued to live abroad after grad school. And so when they separated, I was living in Afghanistan. So I was about as far as I could physically be away from him. And once he moved out of the house, there was no need for me to have any more contact with him. So I just said, cool, I'm done. I never had like a final conversation with him. I never said, this is what I'm doing. Once he was out of the house, I blocked him on everything and that was it. And I just sort of let that ship sail.
Did the thought ever occur to you to potentially send that message? Was there ever a desire to say, hey, this is what's happening and this is why it's happening and I want you to know?
No, because I had already tried to have that conversation with him in so many ways before it happened. Like, I remember being 15 or 16 and just like sobbing in the back of my mom's car as we were driving back, I think, from a family gathering and being like, you can't treat us this way. You can't talk to us this way. Like, you're not a father when you're like this. Like, you can't act like this towards us. Or so, like, I think I had tried to tell him so many different ways and so many different times. And then so I think as I got older and more physically removed and was sort of just taking steps away naturally, just because, you know, there came a point where I had no contact with my father except through my mom. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd call her and she'd be like, your dad wants to say something. Or like, I'd hear him in the background talking to her to talk to me.
Wow.
But then once he was out of her life as well, there was literally no reason to continue to do anything. Mm-hmm. And then I think if any doubts that I had that that was the correct choice were pretty firmly nullified when my sister recounted a conversation that she had with him. She was living in the United States still when they separated. And so in the context of their divorce, or as they were divorcing, she would see him occasionally or have contact with him. And as they were getting divorced, his whole narrative was that my mother had turned us against him, that he had been a great dad, that we had basically been brainwashed by our mom. And my sister said to him very firmly, if you want to have a relationship with the two of us, you need to get help. You need to get into therapy. You need to get on medication. You need to deal with these mental health issues that have plagued you your entire life. You need to get help. You can't have a relationship with us if you don't. And he said, well, then I guess a relationship with the two of you isn't so important to me anyway. So I think for my sister, that was the turning point where she went, oh. But when she told me this story, I was almost surprised by how not surprised I was. Like, for me, that was like, yeah, I already knew that. Like, mm-hmm. he hadn't said it in those words, but I knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just kind of like, yeah.
I can imagine it to still be quite a difficult thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Blocking someone in any regard feels like a very purposeful and very aggressive act somehow, yeah. sometimes. What did that feel like for you? And did it kickstart a new way of being or thinking for you?
Yeah. I think if blocking people feels like an aggressive act, it kind of feels like an aggression towards them. And I think I saw it as the other way around. Mm-hmm. I saw it as aggressively protecting myself. And for the first time having the ability and the life circumstance where that was an option. You know, when my parents were together, I couldn't aggressively protect myself. I could protect myself to the best of my abilities, but I couldn't be like, absolutely not. We are done now. And then so when he didn't have to be in my life anymore, I think it was, sure, it was an aggressive act, but it was one that I did for me.
I love that. I need to print that out and put it.
Great.
But I will aggressively protect myself. Through the process of trying throughout your childhood to communicate with your father, to try and rectify things, there was that level of hope of mm-hmm. maybe it'll change, maybe it won't. And I'd like to get into hope a little bit later. But in those early stages, and you sounded, you know, very full of conviction, was it kind of all you, or did you have communities around you, be they friends, family, your sister,
yeah.
therapy, who yeah. you turned to for some support at that time?
Yes, I did have like a lot of lovely people that I could sort of pull close to me as I was dealing with this. My sister, of course, is the only other human on the face of the planet who knows what it was like to grow up with our father. So she has been a main supporter, and she's still like the main person that I turn to whenever, like, sometimes something will happen in the world and I don't necessarily understand my own response to it. And I will text her and be like, so this happened. This is how it made me feel. Is this me? Or is this dad? And she'll respond back like, no, that's dad. Or no, that's you. Or a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. So definitely my sister. My mom as well. I told my mom, I think when it happened, that I was going to, that I had blocked him and that I was not receiving contact with him anymore. And I was not open to being contacted by him anymore. And also all of my closest friends. My best friends in the world have been my friends since we were kids. Like 7 to 10, and then into high school. And so they have also been there for the entirety, not the entirety, but for most of my struggles with my father. So I think for them, it was also just like, yes, of course, that is the next logical step. And then a lot of therapy, although I didn't get the therapy until a couple years after. But my dad has been a recurring topic in therapy.
Did you receive any kind of pivotal advice in that period?
I don't think so. And I think, like, for me, it wasn't so much, like, there wasn't really a process. There wasn't, like, a pros and cons list. Do I do this? Do I not do this? Like, if there was a process, and I suppose there was, but the process started literally when I was, like, 2 or 3. Like, so the decision to estrange myself or to take steps back, at least away from my relationship with my father, has been ongoing since I was so tiny.
Mm.
And then so when like the final moment happened and I hit block this number, it was the product of 27 years of terribleness. So there wasn't, I don't know that there was like somebody said something or something pushed me over the edge, or like I never sat down and was like, so should I do it? Should I not do it? It was just sort of the next logical step in this 27-year-long saga of struggling.
So I know that since in your adult life, you have also become estranged from friends who, in your work to aggressively protect yourself, you have ended friendships as well. With friends, for example, was there that pros and cons list? How do you navigate those decisions now as an adult? And did that estrangement from your father have any effect on how you navigate that boundary setting in friendships?
Yeah, for sure. I think, and this is something that like I've been working on in therapy, I think sort of as a result of living with my dad for as long as I did, I think my tendency has been to sort of just to move very quickly to end things. Sorry, I shouldn't have snapped.
No, that's fine.
To move like very quickly to end things. And like part of what my therapist has been getting me to do is be like, stop, take a breath, ground yourself, think about this. Like she's been trying to get me like not to make decisions from this sort of reflexive be like, and to take a little bit more time to make these decisions, and as opposed to just reacting so fast.
Mm.
And that has been very hard, because when you grow up in this environment, you know, the coping strategies that you pick up as a child are not necessarily the coping strategies that work for you as an adult. And so a lot of therapy has been looking at those coping strategies and saying what works and what doesn't. And in this case, my fight or flight response is just all fight. And being like, okay, well, we have to be grateful to that part of ourselves for keeping us safe when things were really hard. But now we also have to look at this part and be like, are you serving me as an adult in adult relationships? And the answer to that has been not so much. So with friendships that have ended as an adult, especially in the last couple of years, it's been really hard, because like for comfort and safety, I just want to be like, okay, I see that this is ending, like boom, done. And now it's finished. And part of like having to unlearn that has been having to like sit with the discomfort of like, I don't like this. This doesn't feel safe. Like, I don't like what is happening, but I have to like take a minute or take multiple minutes or days or weeks or months to like think about this and make sure that I'm making the decision from the right place, that the decision is coming from me and not coming from this protective response. My therapist has to remind me all the time that feels like is not the same as is. And especially like for me, because I have this tendency, like in the fight or flight, I'm very much fight. I have a tendency to be like, this feels exactly like this thing with my dad. Ergo, it is the same thing as with my dad. Ergo, just boom, done. Cut it off. Blow it all up. Set the bridge on fire. We're good now. And she has to be like, feels like is not the same thing as is. I know that it feels like something that happened with your dad, or this situation feels like heavily reminds you of your father, but sit down, think about it. Is it the same?
Mm-hmm.
And then when I sit down and I think about it, then I'm like, okay, no, it's not the same, because here are the things, or this is what they actually meant, or this is the place that they're coming from, or this is the circumstance, but it's not the same. Mm-hmm. And so I don't, to react exactly the same is also to do a disservice to myself and my current relationships.
So if I understand correctly, these friendships that have ended, you have given them the time, the space, the thought, the opportunity for second chances, for discussion.
Yes.
To really formulate this idea for yourself of, okay, these are all the reasons why I need to now protect myself.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take this step.
Yeah, I've tried. I've tried to do it that way. And yeah, sometimes the best thing you can do for yourself and for somebody else is to just let them go.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as that sucks, the limbo of a terrible or a toxic relationship is just a really uncomfortable place to park yourself.
Yeah, being in that limbo state, in that toxic state, is horrible, but I can imagine easier with friends, because they are not blood. This idea of family is everything.
Yeah.
It must be even harder to pull away from relationships.
Yeah.
Did you receive any pushback? How did you navigate those moments of conflict?
So I definitely did receive pushback, because again, in Portuguese culture, there's a lot of toxic masculinity bound up in Portuguese culture, and just this idea of like the man, and but he's your father. I unfortunately got pushback from, I think, the aunt that I was closest to, who's my father's sister. And when my sister and I were up at Christmas, we went over to go say hi to her, and she basically surprised us with our father. Like, we walked in and he was there, and we were like, absolutely not.
Did you try and speak to her about that behavior?
Not really. We don't really have that kind of relationship.
Okay.
The most surprising place that I got pushback from was my mom, which I was not expecting, because also she was there for the entirety of my childhood. And, you know, my mom spent a lot of her life doing her absolute best to protect me and my sister from our father. And so when they divorced, I think I thought that she would, of course she would understand. But I think she was getting a lot of pushback from the rest of the family and from like my grandfather. And I think she also kind of felt like, well, maybe just because they're divorced doesn't mean that we can't have a relationship with him. And so she'd be like, you should call your dad. You should call your dad. And I was like, absolutely not. And I had to sit down with myself and remind myself that my mother is as much a victim of my father as I am and as my sister is. And that that was not coming from her. That was coming from the pressure that she was getting from the rest of the family and possibly maybe her own feelings about the divorce. I never really asked. But like eventually my sister and I were like, we will not. You have to stop. Mm-hmm. And she did.
Mm-hmm. For anyone who might be experiencing something similar in the pushback from the people that they love, do you have any advice for how to navigate those conversations?
When it came to like actually having those conversations, I think I learned very quickly not to try to explain myself, but just to be like, I will not. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate your concern, but I'm not willing to have a relationship with him at this time. As soon as you start providing a reason, people start trying to counter it, or people start trying to logic your way out of it. So I think I learned very quickly, give them absolutely nothing. Just be like, they'd be like, but he's your father. And I'd be like, not according to my definition. Mm-hmm. I will not have a relationship with him. Thanks for checking in. I know it's coming from a place of concern, but I'm good. Thanks, though.
Mm-hmm.
And just as soon as you give people anything, they will tug on all those strings.
Was there a part of you that was affected by the string tugging?
Yeah, I mean, it really hurts because, you know, to me, it was so clear and so obvious why this would happen. And these were also relatives who they didn't see everything, but they saw a lot. And I'm like, did you miss the last 29 years of my life? Like, what family parties have you been attending? Like, it was very hurtful. But I've also sort of like with my mom, just had to remind myself, like, there's a lot of cultural background bound up in this, and that it's not necessarily personal, I think. And so I just got to give them nothing.
You've expressed this very clear tool of boundary setting where you have implemented the strategy of if you don't give them anything, they've got nothing to use against you.
Yeah.
There's this clear boundary with other people.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have to maintain boundaries with yourself of, you know, was there ever a game plan for, okay, if he texts me, this is how I handle it? Or when the triggers from that come up, how do I navigate them?
So I think I kind of removed that from the question pretty early on because I blocked him on everything. If he has contacted me, I don't know about it. And for me, that was really important because I think any communication from my dad is just such a massive personal trigger at this point that I can't, like, I'm not in a place where I can even consider receiving a text message from him, as innocuous as it might be. I think a lot of it was also just trying to like disentangle myself from this idea of like, what do we owe our parents? Because I think in, at least in American culture, and also especially in Portuguese culture, there's this idea that like, as a child, you owe your parents something. Like, they brought you into this world, you owe them a certain amount of love, a certain amount of respect. And it's just been disentangling myself from that thought process. You know, as much as I would love to wave my magic wand and live in a world where I do have like a father with whom I get on very well, that's just not, it's not possible in this world. And so I think a lot of the boundaries with myself have just been coming to terms with that, and also grieving that, because plenty of people have dads that they get along with, and it's like, hurts to see. But it's also like, I don't get to have that, at least not with this person in this world, but there are also plenty of people throughout my life who have been father figures or who have taught me the things or provided the support that I wish I had received from my dad. Do you know?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah. So I think part of my disentangling myself from my dad is I've stopped using his last name. So in Portuguese naming conventions, you have two last names. You have your mother's maiden name, which is your first last name, and your father's last name, which is your second. And it sort of happened very naturally with social media, actually. When I was living in Afghanistan, I had two social media accounts, one with my father's last name and one with my mother's last name, because I didn't want our Afghan guards to be friending me on Facebook. And then at some point, I started using both of them when I made appointments at doctor's offices, but Germans would only ever use the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point, I started using my mother's last name for sort of my artistic career. And so at this point, I don't even use my dad's last name. And when it appears on government documents, it surprises me. I forget that I'm attached to this person with this last name just because I never use it or see it. Mm-hmm. And, I think the next couple of decades are going to be really interesting. My parents are getting older. What is going to happen when he, starts potentially requiring care or winds up in the hospital? I'm not sure. I think about that sometimes, and I'm not sure how I will respond to that, or whether I will feel then in that moment I should go see him, or feel maybe I want to work towards reconciliation. At this moment in time, I can firmly say this person will never be in my life. But I also say that knowing that things are going to happen in the next couple of decades that might, I don't know. I really don't know.
What has been something that you have carried with you through this feeling of uncertainty and doubt? Is there something that you are holding on to that helps you with all the decisions that you make?
There's this wonderful quote that I don't even know where it is from. I think it's originally from a German text, but a friend told me about it, and it's really stuck with me. And it was that pain wanders through families until someone is ready to feel it. And it's kind of like this, the buck stops here mentality. You gave me all of this drama, and a lot of it, I think, came from his own trauma that he had growing up. But it's I got two options. I can pass it along, or I can say this stops here and this ends with me and deal with it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sort of the path that I have been taking in the last couple of years with therapy. And it's not fun, but we're working on it.
Being kind to yourself is an incredibly difficult thing to do.
And I think it comes out, I think I'm working on it even when I don't realize that I'm working on it, because it comes out in ways that I don't necessarily expect. I realized recently, so I'm in a theater company that does an improvised Broadway musicals, and we had a couple shows in very quick succession. And I realized that I have a tendency in this group, because we're doing a narrative, to play female characters who have lost their fathers and are looking for them, or fathers who are trying to get back to their daughters, who have made some mistake and are now trying to repair their relationship with their daughters. And I talked to my therapist about it, and she was like, well, that tells you something that your subconscious is currently chewing on, right? But it comes out in this very creative and I think almost cathartic way, because it's a thing that I get to work on through other characters, but it is still all being fueled by myself.
Mm-hmm. As an adult child who has estranged themselves from their parent, what resources could you recommend for somebody else going through it?
So I'm trying to think about memoirs about familial estrangement that I really enjoyed, or about, and I found I love memoirs as a genre, and I very often find myself with memoirs about dysfunctional families or challenging relationships with your parents. So I'm going through my Goodreads right now, and it's I'm Glad My Mom Died by Jeanette McCurdy, or Gypsy Boy by Mikey Walsh, which is about growing up in a traveler community and then coming out as gay and basically having to run from his father.
Mm-hmm.
All About Love by Bell Hooks, just for a slightly different or healthier take on love and what love is supposed to look like. The Glass Castle by Jeanette Wall, which is about her growing up with just really, really crazy parents. She has a very good relationship with her father, but there was also a point in her adult life where she was kind of estranged from them because she was struggling to make her own life outside of them. Do you know the thought that I just had?
Yeah.
Because I'm scrolling through my Goodreads as we're speaking, and there's just a lot of cult books in there about breaking away from cults. All of these are narratives about breaking away from generally the male cult leaders in one way or another. And I'm like, is that why I like these books? There's a lot of cult books on here, Julia. There's so many cult memoirs.
And a lot to learn, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like that a lot of your references for tools on how to navigate this, be they memoirs or books on cults, is that they provide you with some sort of a real life blueprint to potentially be inspired by or follow. And I think that's something personally that I also gravitate towards because I struggle. And I think this process is so up and down.
Yeah.
It's so different day to day that sometimes you do just want to see how someone else has done it.
Yeah.
Give it a shot.
Yeah.
And see where it goes from there.
Yeah. I think a blueprint, if there were a blueprint for dealing with this stuff, it would be so lovely. If it was here is step one and here is step two and here is step three. But human relationships are so complicated, and especially the decision to remove yourself from a relationship that socially, culturally we're taught is so important as parent-child is, I don't think it can follow a blueprint. I think everybody's just sort of taking the steps that feel right and feel like they make sense and hoping we're moving on blind faith, that we're moving away from something that we know is not working and hopefully moving towards something that is going to be better.
Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me and for sharing all that you did.
Thank you so much for having me.